critically analyzing national affairs. This is State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk. TNT.
All right, welcome to State of the Nation. We are live with today's News Talk. TNTRadio.live is our website. I'm Brian McClain out of Central Texas. I'm here with Timothy Shea out of Central New York. Timothy, wonderful to see you on this fine Thursday, May the 9th.
Always great to see you, Hesh, and I'm really excited for our first guest tonight.
I am too, and we are going to jump right into it so we can maximize our time with Michael Yon. Michael Yon, of course, America's most experienced combat correspondent. He's traveled and worked in 98 countries, been there for various wars, and man, he is really, really piling up the information on his X.com account and all the interviews he's doing. Michael, welcome back to State of the Nation. Thank you for joining us again.
Thank you. It's amazing. We got New York and Texas, and I'm in Taiwan. So we're all over the globe here. I'm in Taiwan watching. You know, of course, this is right next to China, and literally missiles can hit right where I'm at right now, a direct fire, right? And coming and going. So this is quite an interesting place. Believe it or not, actually, the United States has forces, special forces, a small number on a place called Chinmen Island, or Kinmen, it depends who you're talking with, but that's only just a few miles off the Chinese border. For that island, that's a part of, you know, there's numerous islands that comprise Taiwan. I'm on the main island now. I'm in Taipei, the capital. But that small island, you can literally see the lights of China from that island. So this, you know, so it's closer than a lot of people might imagine. And it's interesting too, because, you know, this used to be called Formosa. Taiwan used to be called Formosa. Many Americans actually believe that this used to be part of China. And they'll say, you know, the breakaway province of Taiwan, or reunification with the breakaway province of Taiwan needs to reunify with China and that sort of thing. So they'll constantly talk about reunification. But actually, in fact, Taiwan was absolutely never part of China. 0 days, for not even 1 second. But I often challenge people, they'll say, of course it was. And I say, okay, now put your cards on the table. You will not find it. It was never, ever, ever part of China. It was part of the Ming Dynasty at one point. There was only a small part in some, but the Ming Dynasty wasn't China. Those were Manchu people. They weren't Han Chinese. It was a totally different thing. Interestingly, I picked up a book a few days ago, last week, I guess now. This is an 1896 book. It was written by a Canadian missionary, and his name was Dr. McKay. He was a dentist. And it's called From Far Formosa. And he actually talks about the subversion. He was actually out with the headhunters. This place was loaded with headhunters, straight up cannibals. I mean, they were hardcore. You wouldn't believe all the headhunting and cannibalism went on here. So the missionaries came out here, and some of those were out with the headhunters, and some lost their heads. But this guy is a very good writer. I've been reading part of his book here, and he talks about subversion. Let me read this one little two sentences here. He's talking about how the Chinese use drugs to subvert the indigenous people here, right? Which we see all over the world. And, you know, by the way, the Chinese are always talking about the opium wars and how the British and the others, you know, put opium into them, and now they're getting their revenge. But what they always fail to mention is that Chinese have been doing this all over the place since forever, and they're doing it here in Taiwan now with their fentanyl and the United States and fentanyl. So let me read this. This is from 1896, right? Most of all, take account of the utterly damning effect of intoxicants introduced by the wily Chinese trader, for which, when once awakened, the savage thirst is insatiable. Facing a conspiracy of such resisting and demoralizing forces. In other words, there's these other things that the Chinese do, but one of them is just drugs. Just gave the local indigenous people drugs, and it was, you know, very helpful in subverting. I met with some people in the Taiwanese government a couple of days ago, and we've met actually several days in the last week, and we talked about drugs. The last time I was in Taiwan, the last time I was here for any length of time was about 20 years ago. There was no graffiti or anything on the streets. This is a very safe place, by the way. But now I'm seeing graffiti all over the place, right? And what the other day, or a couple of weeks ago now, my hair's getting longer. The kid giving me my haircut, he must have been maybe 25 or so. He said, you know, he wanted to go to Thailand. I'm in Taiwan. He wanted to go to Thailand, totally different country, different language. He wanted to go over there so he could try marijuana. I said, don't do that crap. It's they're putting chemicals in it. It's not like it. But the bottom line is as we see the Chinese now coming into the United States in massive numbers. They go through the Darien Gap. They end up in places like Maine, and they end up in California and Oregon and Oklahoma. We talked about this before. And they're growing billions of dollars worth of marijuana. And separately but related, thousands of Americans are dying per month from the fentanyl, from the precursors that the Chinese are sending over. This subversion that they've been doing for a long time. And by the way, in the opium wars, they act like they were complete victims. You know, the British came and did all the Chinese were the main people doing the opium wars, right? But they always omit that part. You know, it's like when we talk about slavery days, people, you know, just omit that slavery is still going on all over the world. And many of the slaveholders actually were the wrong color, right? So the bottom line, it's the same thing with the drug wars, right? The Chinese are constantly talking about, one thing I've learned in my travels around the world is I'm usually the only white guy I see often for long periods of time, right? And I've learned, so I've been with so many cultures, right? And I've learned that the victim cultures, the ones who are constantly saying, I'm a victim, I'm a victim, I'm a victim, they're professional victims. They are always predators, always. They'll be cultural level predators, right? And that's what we see with the Chinese Communist Party. Now, keep in mind, I'm in Hong Kong. I'm sorry, I was in Hong Kong before. I'm in Taiwan. I was thinking about Hong Kong there for a minute there. But because you'll see that Hong Kong doesn't play professional victim. Taiwan does not play professional victim. They don't. This is such a nice place. You should come here with your families, right? I mean, you'll love Taiwan. Except for the missiles pointed at us from China, the victimizer here in Taiwan, which has never been part of China, the people here are as civilized as it gets, right? And it's just quite, you know, you can walk out at midnight and it's extremely safe. It doesn't matter. You know, last night I was up in Taipei 101. It's a huge building down the street from here. It's 101 floors tall. And, you know, it feels quite safe. They can have, you know, kids running around everywhere. You know, it feels good because, you know, when you go to places where there's no kids, it never feels like it's quite alive. But, you know, there's a lot of kids running around, very safe, no problem. But again, what we're faced with, the reason I'm in Taiwan right now is because China wants to take Taiwan, and they're doing a subversion. They're doing an information war that pretends that this used to be. Now, look at. Just came out in the news this week that actually the nephew of the Dalai Lama sent me this article that he wrote. The nephew of the Dalai Lama wrote the article and he sent it to me. But he talks about how China wants to rename part of India now, a place called Arunachal Pradesh up in the north. It's near Sikkim. It's near Tibet. Right. I've been up there. And now the Chinese want to rename that part of India into a Chinese name. And they also are. You want to rename Tibet. They don't want it to be called Tibet. They constantly do these renamings, right? They constantly rewrite. I call it map warfare, where first of all, you just rename it and you just redraw the map. And once people see the map, that's an instant subversion right there. They're like, well, here's the map. And then it starts showing up on, you know, TV programs and everybody will say, well, everybody knows Taiwan or Tibet or wherever used to be part of China. And it's just a complete and utter lie, right? Anyway, you probably have a question or two so I'll ramble on about Taiwan all day long.
Well, I'm learning a lot from it, actually. I don't know about you, Timothy, but I'm learning a lot from it. I mean, what is, just to follow on what you were just saying, what is the argument that we hear from the mass medias and from Chinese propagandists about why they should be able to take Taiwan?
Oh, they just lie. It's just a direct lie. They say it used to be part of China and they broke away. It's absolutely false. It never happened. Just imagine that. You know, years ago, because I've written 3 books on Chinese information war. They're only in Japanese. They're not in English. So unless you read Japanese, don't bother. But because I've been working so long to wake up the Japanese to this, right? And And so anyway, during that time frame, I mentioned at one point, I published it somewhere, that one day the Chinese will claim the moon. And I was saying that in full seriousness, right? And they'll claim it because they'll say one of our, you know, astronomers actually mapped the craters or something, right? And they'll do something, or maybe he spotted it on the beach the first time or something. You know what I mean? They'll make these claims based on the, you know, their land claims and their sea claims. It'll be based on the ocean shelves and these sorts of things, continental shelves, you know, that sort of thing. They make these claims just out of the blue so that they can just, they are very, this is a voracious imperialist power. If you look at the map of, you look at the head of my Twitter, actually, the X feed, look at that map up there. About 2/3 of China has been stolen recently, right? Remember, China never formed until 1911. They try to make it sound like, oh, we've been around for 5,000 years. That's complete nonsense. They've been around since 1911. You know, the M1911 45 pistol, that's how you can remember it, right? There's a what was issued when I was first in the army, and then they went to those punk 9mm. But 1911, and they're Han Chinese, right? Before that, it's a bunch of dynasties and that sort of thing from different, sometimes Han and other, you know, like the Ming, King dynasty was Manchus, by the way. That's the one that had a little settlement on the south part of Taiwan. And people will claim, one thing that did happen during the Chinese Civil War was, well, actually, let's go back to 1895. In 1895, the Japanese actually, annexed Formosa, and it became part of Japan. It was like, so the people here were actually Japanese citizens. There's still old people here. In fact, I was just over at the Epoch Times offices a few days ago or so, and I talked with the chief editor there, and he said his father's 93, and his father still sings Japanese songs. A lot of the older Taiwanese people, they were here during the when this was actually part of Japan, because they were born here, and they still sing Japanese songs. They get together once a month in many villages across this country, Taiwan, and they sing Japanese songs. And I've gone out and talked with old people before, asking them about their memories of Japanese, and they talked about they would have parades when their young people were accepted into the Imperial Japanese Army. That they were, if you look at the information war, you would think that half of Asia or most of Asia hates Japan. But the fact is, the relationship between Taiwan and Japan is, I mean, seriously, they're practically married. They love each other, right? And again, I've spent probably 18 years in Asia. I spent in 25 Asian countries, right? Including a year in China, a year in India, a year in Nepal, a lot in Thailand, Japan. I'm here in Taiwan again, you know, and one time I was giving a speech in Tokyo, maybe 10 years ago. And it was in front of a bunch of, you know, historians and that sort of thing. And I said, you know what, I've been all over this world. And I ask certain questions in each country I go to. For instance, I'll ask them, do you trust your police? Do you trust your army? Do you trust your courts? And that sort of thing. Just basic, what do you think about the food prices, the fuel prices? I'm just getting the atmospherics, right? And I'll ask them, which other countries do you like or fear or mistrust, distrust? And interestingly, one thing that I found, Americans would think that the whole world hates America. But I can say this with just from my experience, the most respected country until just recent times definitely was the United States. For sure. I mean, but Americans, if you ask Americans, they'll say, oh, we're hated around the world. I'm like, I live around the world. It's just simply untrue, right? And again, sometimes I go for weeks at a time and don't see another white person except on TV or something, right? But the second most respected country around the world is clearly Japan, clearly. But when I was given this speech about 10 years ago in Tokyo, and I asked him, I said, I've asked this many times. I've only found three countries that hate Japan, and it's not the entire countries, but it's part people in those countries. And I ask, what are those countries? And people are like, China, right? I said, actually, a lot of Chinese actually love Japan, but their government clearly is doing a massive information war. Another is people say Korea, right? And then, you know, North and South Korea. I said, just mix those two together. So North and South Korea is one country. China, what's the third country? What's the third country that hates Japan? And none of them could get it. This is like a bunch of historians and whatnot. I said, the third country that hates Japan is Japan, because Japanese have been subverted, right? You've been taught to think that the world hates you, and you've been taught to hate yourself. That started with the war guilt program. Actually, it started before that, but that in the 1940s and 50s, but it actually started before that. But the bottom line is, like I said, and they almost gave a standing ovation. You could probably find that talk I did on video somewhere online. But the bottom line is, I said, it's the same in the United States. I love my country, the United States, but when you go back to the United States and I ask Americans, they'll be like, oh, the world hates us. I'm like, you're out of your mind, man. I'm just back here on a quick vacation, and then I'm going back to India or someplace, you know? And and I always feel welcome. And it's just untrue.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there, but I was just having that same thought. I was like, wow, that sounds a lot like what's going on in our country with a lot of people. Hold the line, Michael. We got a station break we're going to take, and we'll pick right back up right here on State of the Nation. This is TNT.
TNT's Dirk Pohlman.
So this is essential. We have now the insurance company saying it's a state actor that did it, so it's an act of war. It's not an act of terrorism, so we don't pay. And now we'll see what is officially coming up. I can tell you that this, what we just talked about, was not mentioned in the German mainstream media. This is something that was completely cast aside. We didn't hear about it.
The insurance policy seems, as you said correctly, seems to cover terrorism but not war. So compensation for the plaintiff would only be possible if the attack were considered an act of terrorism but not an act of war. However, this is important, however, even if the insurance covers only terrorism, a distinction has to be made between when a state is involved and when there's no state involvement.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
It's time to switch on
today's News Talk Radio.
Very entertaining.
Yeah! TNT.
All right, we're with Michael Yon, of course. Michael, thanks for the update from your travels. Always interesting to hear where you're at and your opinions on it. We spoke to you when you were in Panama. Just always amazing stuff. If we can shift slightly, though, let us show you this clip. We have a clip out of, go ahead and roll this clip and we'll get your take on it, please. All right. Well, massive protests. I believe that one was out of Spain. Just your thoughts generally about what we're seeing. We've got dozens of colleges here in the United States. We've got protests breaking out in Mexico City, Spain, London, all over the place.
I couldn't actually see it. It went blank screen, but I know what's going on. It's subversion, right? Again, it's back to like the drugs that we were talking about before, the information war subversion that makes everybody think Taiwan's part of China and makes people think Tibet's part of China, makes people think parts of India are part of China. It makes Americans think the world hates us. It's subversion, right? Makes people want to get sex change operations and that sort of thing. Subversion. And there's many faces of subversion, but it's there and it's around us. And actually, you know, I've made a lot of people angry in recent times because I've gone after certain big figures who are smoking dope on their programs. And whenever I bring this up, they'll say, oh, you're one of those anti-doper fogies from the 1940s or something. I'm like, actually, I wasn't born yet. But the bottom line is we're looking at subversion. The Chinese are coming through the Darien Gap and they're growing marijuana all over the place and they're selling it. And they're making billions of dollars, and they're using that to dumb down our people so that they can subvert us. I mean, you know, you're much more open and you're much more open to suggestion when you're on any kind of intoxicant, whether that be alcohol or whatever. And so bottom line is what's happening on the campuses Again, it's just information campaigns, but information, I say just, I don't mean that to subordinate what's going on. I mean, information war is the highest form of warfare. All else is subordinate to information war. The kinetic wars and whatnot, I mean, you can completely subdue countries with information war. In China, you know, people like Sun Tzu and the amalgam of writers that came along with him, you know, they talk, you know, what's the acme of warfare is to subdue your enemy without fighting. I mean, it can and is done regularly, right? And so that's what we see on the campuses. That's why, you know, and actually Israel is in severe danger with this war. I mean, it's not all about Gaza. Everybody's watching, right? This is a huge playing field. There's this, you know, Americans and many other Westerners have this idea of warfare that it all takes place with guns and missiles and that sort of thing. And there's some finite battlefield where it takes place in. In reality, these wars are global, especially these days, right? And you see the ecosystem doesn't stop in the Middle East. It's everywhere, and it's taking place. Look, we have millions of people coming into the United States and millions more going into Europe, right? And many of these people are Hamas. They are Hezbollah, right? We have Iranians and Lebanese that fly to Venezuela daily, every single day, and they get passports on arrival and they go through the Darien Gap. By the way, speaking of Darien Gap, Panama, that's between Colombia and Panama, right? I've spent probably 6 months down there since Biden was installed. I got word yesterday that the Panamanian government believes that there'll be a huge influx in June. And right now it's 1,000 to 2,000 people per day, right? They think that the numbers will greatly increase. There's a gang, and there's different gangs that are involved. There's also the main ones are the NGOs, right? The United Nations and the IOM, which is the International Organization for Migration, which is United Nations, chiefly funded by the United States, Germany, Canada. I mean, we are invading ourselves, right? But now there's a lot more gangs that are coming to bear in larger numbers. For instance, one in Ecuador called Los Lobos. It's a huge gang there. That means the wolves. And also gangs and cartels in Colombia and whatnot. But now I got word yesterday from the Panamanian government's actually, I don't know if they published this, but that Brazil, due to the flooding, there's some severe flooding in Brazil, and they're dumping out some of their prisons right now as a result of the flooding. They're not dumping out the prisons to weaponize them against us. But the Panamanian government thinks that those people are going to then make their way up through Venezuela and then through Colombia, Venezuela and Colombia, Venezuela borders Colombia. And then through, you know, Colombia, you get into the Darien Gap and then you emerge a few days later and you're in Panama. And then it's a straight shot. The road goes straight to the United States. I'm down there all the time, right? So in other words, the thing down in Panama is growing. Now, another president was just elected. He's not in office yet. Jose Raul Mulino, and he has made part of his election platform that he will close down the Darien Gap. Now, some people immediately say that's impossible. It's not impossible. I'm down there all the time. Physically, you can close a lot of the spigot pretty easily. Now, closing everybody off, no, you're not going to do that. There's people that can definitely get through, but you can reduce the numbers by, I don't know, to be directionally accurate, let's say 95% with very little effort. There is a jungle there, right? It is the Darien Gap. I mean, the jungle is on your side. If you want to close people down, they're already channelized, right? And so you can do it. There's this one area in particular called the Mountain of Death, Montaña de la Muerta. That's an easy place to shut them down and make them go back to Colombia, right? But the bottom line is the hard part of shutting the Darien Gap will not be the physical aspect. It will be political and economic. The United States, again, is deeply involved in the subversion of ourselves and all the countries in Central America. And actually, a lot of the people come through right now. A lot of the people are skipping Panama and they go to Nicaragua. A huge amount of people fly directly to Nicaragua. Nicaragua has become like the new Panama. But so even as the Panama numbers still continue to increase, when you look at quarter over quarter, Nicaragua has taken a lot of that pressure off, and the United States is flying people directly into the United States from countries like Guatemala, countries like Colombia. They're flying directly in. They're not even, if they fly from Colombia, they're not going through the Darien Gap. And many of the people, and keep in mind, much of the flow that comes across our southern border, like into Texas, doesn't go through the Darien Gap either, because they either start in Nicaragua or they start in Mexico or they start somewhere else like Guatemala or Honduras, and they're just flooding in from their Central American countries, or they're, again, many Cubans now and Haitians and others go straight to Nicaragua. Nicaragua is openly weaponizing the invasion flows because, you know, they hate us and they're communist, and we've had a big war there with them.
Michael, I just want to tie two things that you said together. Just as Taiwan was never part of China, there was never a country named Palestine. There's no ethnic people Palestinians. The West Bank was part of Transjordan before the 1967 war, where the Arabs attacked Israel, and they lost that territory when Israel won that war, successfully defending itself from Arab attack. And likewise, Gaza was part of Egypt. In fact, people tried to enter Egypt from Gaza yesterday, and they were repelled by the Egyptian army, because the Arab nations in the region find the people in that territory more valuable as political footballs than they are as citizens of their own nation, right? The people from in the West Bank all of a sudden lost their Transjordanian citizenship when Transjordan became the Kingdom of Jordan. And likewise, the Gaza Strip, the only reason there is a Gaza Strip or the West Bank is because Israel made the mistake of trading land for peace. And well, look where that got us. I'd like to get your take on that after this quick headline from today's News Talk, TNT.
Time to read some news. TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. UK Interior Minister James Cleverly has announced new sanctions targeting Russia's diplomatic operations in the UK, citing Moscow's malign activity. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen is facing growing disenchantment from EU elites. French President Emmanuel Macron, a key supporter of von der Leyen, is reportedly considering alternatives for her position. A report from the Center for Policy Studies in Britain challenges the notion that mass migration has stimulated the economy.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Mike, I'd like to get your opinion on how I just tied what you said about Taiwan together with what you said about Israel.
Yeah, I mean, the information wars are absolutely intense. And keep in mind, our ancestors were already extremely good at information war. They were masters. I mean, these are the sorts of people that could build, you know, incredible cathedrals and bridges and everything else. And they could do information war just as well, right? But now we have the electronic world. We have our, you know, they have AI, they have big data, they have, you know, people can be micro-targeted now like never before. Information war can just spread, you know, in so fast. And not only that, the rewards can be spread so fast. For instance, people can have money put on their phone or other sorts of dopamine hits, you know, for doing certain actions or saying certain things. I mean, the principal form of warfare now is information war. I would suggest everybody read a book called Rape of the Mind. Rape of the Mind. It's a 1956 book from a Dutch psychologist named Joost Merlo. Rape of the Mind, and you'll see it's from 1956, so that's before all these iPhones and whatnot, but you'll see that the techniques that are used on us are straight out of these old books, right? But again, actually, 1956 is not a very old book when it comes to, subversion. These things have been going on a lot longer. Again, like I just read you a passage out of an 1856 book where drugs were being used by Chinese traders for subversion. Of course, we did it with the Native Americans, and it's been done since, you know, all over. I was just talking with somebody last night about this. Where was the first known instance of people using drugs in drug warfare? I don't know, actually. I mean, I see it. It pops because I read a lot of old books, but usually it just pops up in a passage. Like in this one, it just showed up in two sentences, right? It didn't show up with the whole book is not about that. The whole book is about It's this missionary that came up and was, you know, working in with the as they called them back then, savages. And it's interesting because how the words have changed, right? But the subversion, you know, that's been used with alcohol and other drugs, it just goes on and on and on.
Well, arguably, we've already been subverted just over, you know, the entire Atlanticist block, the entire Western countries by Big Pharma. So it's like we're already crippled by Big Pharma and big food industry. You know, you look at people walking around New York in the early 1900s and there's no fat people. And now you look at people walking around any city and it's just, you know, full of obese people jabbed up. That's the other thing. Like, what do you think about that escalation there? Because we went from a pharmacologically attacked culture to an mRNA attacked culture. And you know, somewhere in there, we've added in the deadly fentanyl, which is like, you know, opium wars on I can't even say on crack because fentanyl is worse than crack. But I mean, right. there's we seem to be in some sort of mushroom cloud here when it comes to, you know, our biology.
Right. You know, and when I talk about drugs, I don't mean just, you know, cocaine. By the way, Masako Ganaha and I, the Japanese journalist, we were just up in Canada and the government is actually giving out cocaine, actual cocaine. We went into the place where they're doing it in Vancouver. It's in Chinatown. We physically went in. They kicked us out. Anyway, that was just like a few weeks, maybe a month ago. Right. And wow. But so when the drugs are, they're not necessarily illegal drugs or cocaine or marijuana. It's often prescription drugs. And again, keep in mind, I spend most of my time outside of the United States. And when I come back to the United States, I can tell that my countrymen are not the way they used to be when I grew up or when I was there when I was younger. I mean, I can see that they're in that a lot of the people, their cognitive abilities are clearly lower than what I remember and what I see in other countries, right? I mean, I can see that they're just not firing at the maximum rate that they used to fire at. And is this from prescription drugs? Is it from alcohol? I don't know what it's from, but I can see it. And one of the things that I can smell everywhere I go, Washington, D.C., in the hotels and the elevators, down in front of the White House, I smell dope everywhere. I smell it in Oregon. I've been all over the United States. I've been all over the United States recently. I came back to the United States in August 2020, right? Because I suspect I'd been in the previous 20 years, most of that was downrange and wars like Iraq and Afghanistan and that sort of thing. And then in 2020, I said, wow, my country looks like it's going into war. So I flew back to the United States in August 2020. And I went and I started publishing. It looks like the United States is showing the same sort of symptoms that, you know, when I go off to somebody's war. If I show up at your place, you should probably be moving out or buying a gun, right? I mean, and I told that to members of the Taiwanese government the other day, you know, that I'm actually here is not necessarily a good sign at all. You know, like in Texas, I spend so much time in Texas. It's a front line. But I went back to the United States in August of 2020, and I went straight to Portland, where all the Antifa clowns are out there doing their dope. They're all doped up. I spent a lot of time with Antifa. I was with some in Hong Kong, believe it or not. That was when I first actually realized Antifa existed. And I didn't quite really know who they were yet. Then I started seeing the huge violence that they were doing in the United States. I read that book, Antifa. And then I flew back to the United States and I went to Oregon and I was out there with them. I was in their riots and things that they were doing, listening to them talk, watching them do their drugs. They're a bunch of drug monkeys. And I went over to Washington, D.C. and saw it in Philadelphia, saw it in Atlanta. I was out with those guys in a lot of different places, right? Same story. Drugged up guys wound up going crazy. And likewise, when we see these Karens in the United States, everybody knows who the Karens are now, right? And often when I'm out with them and I'm watching them very closely, I can tell that something's not right. It's as if they are on drugs, right? Read the book Rape of the Mind by Juice Merlot, and he'll talk about how important drugs are to getting people subverted and take in either not doing things like sitting down, watching the invasion, like you see these giant podcasters literally smoking dope on their show, talking about space aliens in Texas while the border is being overrun a couple hours down from their studios, right? I mean, that's high level subversion. You got to hand it to our enemies. And unfortunately, they could use the same techniques, by the way, to make the world a better place. You could use the same brainwashing techniques that make everybody stay out of the bars and go home to their family, right? You could use the exact same techniques, right? And instead, they've chosen to use these techniques for evil and dark ends.
Yeah, yeah. Michael, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts you want to leave us with today? And thank you for your time.
Read Rape of the Mind by Just Mirlo, 1956. Read it very closely. It's a slow read. You'll need to think about it when you're reading it. And so, read it in a quiet place and read it slowly and understand what you're reading. And you'll see the techniques that are being used. It's a martial art, right? And, if you do martial arts, you'll know when somebody's getting you in a chokehold, you'll know how to try to avoid it and reverse it and get them in it. When you've reached the highest level of your knowledge of brainwashing, reverse that and brainwash your brainwasher, right? That's like the acme of brainwashing skill. Identify somebody who's trying to brainwash you and brainwash them, right? Do it. You can do it.
All right. Great parting words. At Michael_Yon on X.com. Thanks, Michael. We'll talk to you again real soon. Safe travels. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
My baby's back from the West Coast.
Hear those pictures that you asked for your school project? First day of school, cute as a button.
So long ago.
Oh, here's Grandma Florence after that flood wiped out the whole neighborhood.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe. And is the best way to protect that legacy.
Those beans smell heavenly.
Mm-hmm. Give Mom a little credit.
You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year.
Oh, great idea.
At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with Elaine.
Okay.
Smart.
I'm coming to share with you guys.
Protect your legacy. Plan for natural disasters today. Visit ready.gov/plan.
Eggs. You can fry them, scramble them, poach them, boil them, or race them on a spoon. But uncooked eggs can be a risk for food poisoning. To be safe, avoid buying dirty or cracked eggs. Always wash your hands after handling eggs. And if you're concerned, pregnant, elderly, or have a poor immune system, make sure you cook eggs until the yolk starts to firm. Or look for new pasteurized eggs. For excellent eggs, handle them safely.
The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McLean and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT.
Joining us now to discuss his explosive new blockbuster, The Assassination of John F. Kennedy, The Final Analysis, is prolific award-winning author and host of The Truth Central, Dr. Jerome Corsi. You can follow him on X at Corsi Jerome numeral one and his website, thetruthcentral.com. Dr. Corsi, welcome back to the State of the Nation.
Timothy, it's great to be back with you. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm quite well, thanks. It's great to see you. I can't wait to read this new book, your first book on the assassination in Dallas, Who Really Killed Kennedy 50 Years Later, Stunning New Revelations About the JFK Assassination, was, in my eyes, the definitive analysis of the assassination, and you laid it clearly at the Dulles brothers' feet. What's in the new book and why is this such an important work?
Well, this book is based on the work of my co-author, David Mantic, who's got a PhD in physics and also an MD. He's a radiation oncologist. He's practiced for 50 years. And he's in his fifth decade, let's say that. He's seen the JFK autopsy x-rays in the archives more than anyone else. He's seen them 9 times. He took in densitometer. He did millimeter by millimeter, sometimes tenth of a millimeter by millimeter, optical density measurements, which is a scientific measurement with a densitometer, how much light is coming through the X-ray. It permits you to know precisely what you're looking at. Now, Dr. Mantic concluded the 3 skull X-rays that we have from JFK's autopsy, all 3 are forged to hide evidence of frontal shots. And there's 2 frontal shots that can be clearly seen in the X-rays, unmistakably. In fact, if we can share the screen, I can actually show you a couple of the pictures, which I've been doing, which are very dramatic. And I think it's clear to me that anyone who sees these will and reads the science. You know, Dr. Manning's been publishing this for over 30 years, but his work is dense. It's mathematical. It's scientific. It's medical. And I determined we're going to write a book that everybody could read. And so we very clearly make it indisputable that the government lied. It's a coup d'etat, and the x-rays are the story. If you let me share the screen, I'll show you the cover of the book. Can you do that? Let me see if I can share the screen now. Okay, here we go. I think this permits me to share the screen. There we go. Can you see this?
That's not going to work.
That's not going to work. Okay, well then, the front of the book shows the x-ray, and right at the forehead, there's a wound that entered the forehead, and it was a frontal wound. You can see actually the trail of the bullet going across the top of the skull x-ray, and it's apparent that that's a bullet trail. Broken up at the beginning, there's little dust particles. The largest particle is at the back. That means largest particle, and when a gunshot breaks up in the head, that you see is the one that travels the farthest, and it did not exit. So that is clearly a frontal shot. Another shot occurred at the back of the head at a low angle by the knob in the back of your head, and it blew out much of the front of the head. But the shot that was the most devastating was one that hit on the right ear by the temporal bone. You can see the entry wound in the x-ray, and it blew out the back of Jack Kennedy's head. That's the one that threw him back into the left. Also, a shot came through the windshield and hit on the throat. That was a throat wound. And that was clearly a frontal shot, too, because of the nature of the shot. It punctured the glass. Glass was thrown into the compartment and the exit of that bullet. Jack Kennedy's face and the autopsy was scarred with glass, and the bleeding was coming out from the front of his face that could not be seen except up close. Now, this points out there are at least three shooters. One is on the grassy knoll, and I can show you, and I've been illustrating how the Zapruder film shows the shot that first pushes him forward, frame 313. You get the shot coming out of the front of the head. Frame 331, you can actually see this shot explode on the side of his head. He's thrown violently back to the left. All the blood matter, the brain matter, is on Clint Hill, the Secret Service agent, who's trying to reach the left trunk hand rail to climb up on the limousine. The motorcycle officer on the left is splattered with Jack Kennedy's blood and brain, and a piece of the back of the head falls out on the lawn across from the grassy knoll. When Jack Kennedy's brought to Parkland Hospital, the doctors give a press conference. They all know that he was shot from the front, and the government has lied for 60 years. This book dramatically and definitively gives you the science. We show you the wounds. We show you Dr. Chesser, another MD, verified that the analysis of the x-rays is correct. I've been in touch with Robert Kennedy Jr. He knows about the book. He asked for a copy. Robert Kennedy Jr.'s radiologist also looked at the original evidence and agreed. I supplied him with all the material in the book, and he agreed that we were correct. Jack Kennedy was shot from the front. There were no shots that hit the head from the sixth book of the Texas School Book Depository. And it's obvious from a scientific analysis of the skull x-rays in the archives.
Yeah, I'm looking at the images now, and just, I can tell great detail was put into the angle of the arrows showing the three shots, and you can tell from the yellow one is the one pointing at the back of his head. You could tell there's no way at that angle that would be coming from the third floor.
Right, and, you know, the government has lied about this. Now, the government had a lot of problems, and the doctors at Parkland knew Kennedy was shot from the front. They gave a press conference and said he was shot from the front. And the press secretary traveling with Kennedy in Dallas, his name was Kilduff, Malcolm Kilduff. He gave a press conference impromptu at Dallas at Parkland Hospital. He said he pointed to his forehead where Kennedy was shot. He said it was a shot through the head. They asked him where the shots came from. He said the right front. The doctors gave a press conference and said that. Now, the Secret Service took Jack Kennedy's body out of Parkland Hospital at gunpoint. A mortician and the Justice of the Peace showed up. It was a local murder. They were going to do the autopsy in Dallas. Secret Service drew their weapons and put the doctor, the coroner, and the Justice of the Peace up against the wall, and they took the casket out, the ceremonial casket that they had ordered from a local funeral home. The first moments after the assassination, when the limousine was at Parkland Hospital, after Jack Kennedy and Connolly and everyone were out of the limousine, Secret Service took a bucket of water and was erasing the crime scene evidence from the back seat. People saw the puncture wound through the front windshield. The Secret Service cordoned off the car, wouldn't let people photograph it, and moved the limousine out of there quickly. Within, by that Sunday, assassination happened on a Friday, the limousine was in Dearborn, Michigan, and the limousine was being replaced. The front windshield was being replaced to make it appear as if the shot had occurred from the back. The government had problems with this because the body showed frontal wounds. But when Oswald was arrested, it was supposed to have been shooting from the sniper's nest in the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository. And that was behind Kennedy when the shooting started. And the photographs at the time, including one taken by AP photographer Alchins, showed the Texas School Book Depository in the background. So the body shows frontal shots. But the cover-up story, the lie, the coup d'etat, the shots all have come from the back. The government's got problems.
Well, it's got problems because of Dan Rather's on-air description of what he saw, which was that the president was thrown backward and then forward, which would indicate that, you know, first that shot that came through the windshield that hit him in the throat, his hands went up to the throat and he went backward. And then he was hit from behind, went forward. And then, of course, there was the kill shot, as you mentioned, from the grassy knoll. So Dan Rather was forced to recant and said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I got it backwards." He went forward and then he went backward. He didn't go backward and then forward. And then we've got the ridiculous narrative of the magic bullet.
Right. I mean, one of the other problems was that up in the sniper nest, the government had planted only three cartridges, but James Tague, a witness, got hit by one of the. He was standing on the other side of the grassy knoll by underneath the triple underpass. He got hit in the cheek with a bullet that missed. So now two bullets have to do all this damage to Kennedy.
Yeah, because
and to
one of them hit the curb by the railroad overpass, didn't it?
That's right. It hit the curb and it hit Tag in the cheek. So now they've only got two shots. The main one, the two most shocking parts of this book are the forensic evidence, which shows that frontal shot that went through the forehead. You can actually see that had to, Dr. Manning believes, and so does Dr. Chesser, who independently looked at the optical density, did his own optical density measurements. That was undoubtedly a liquid mercury bullet that could not have been removed, because when the body shows up at the Bethesda morgue at 6:30 that night in Washington, shows up in a shipping casket, not the ceremonial casket the body left Dallas in a body bag. And there's witnesses there, and the corpsman and the mortician see Humes and Boswell come out, and they do pre-autopsy surgery to change the frontal wounds into back wounds. They actually remove with a saw the entire parietal bone at the top of Jack Kennedy's head, and the photographs from the morgue show the pre-autopsy surgery. It's clearly pre-autopsy surgery. It's not bullet wounds. And when the body was finally put back in the ceremonial casket and brought out to the morgue gallery at 8 o'clock that night, the gallery gasped. The doctors in attendance saw the surgery, and Dr. Hume said there was pre-autopsy surgery to the head. Two FBI agents put that in their 302 after action report, the two agents who were there watching it. So we have documentation that the government altered the wounds, and there's sworn testimony that the book cites in depth the Assassination Records Review Board that was created after the assassination in 1991, after Oliver Stone's film. We worked with Douglas Horn. There are massive interviews of the corpsmen that were present. They saw the after action, the prior t- to autopsy, surgery of the head. The doctors from Bethesda spent all night, the night of the assassination, telling the doctors at Parkland they had to change their story or they would never practice medicine again. They would be brought before a medical board, they would lose their licenses, and their medical careers would be at an end. There's ample documentation in this book of how the government altered the evidence to make it fit the story of the crime that they had pre-committed to when Oswald was really a patsy. It was like he said he was. He didn't shoot anybody that day. He failed the paraffin test. He hadn't fired a rifle. But this narrative that was issued to the press, you know, within an hour of the assassination, Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested. And worldwide, the government circulated a full dossier on Lee Harvey Oswald saying he was a Marine who defected to Russia. They had a prepared CIA biography that was circulated to the international press that could only have been done had they been preparing to frame Oswald for the murder from the beginning. Three gunmen, two from the front, mean this was a government conspiracy. Government was covering it up from the first minutes. This was the CIA working with the military-industrial complex. The generals wanted to go to war in the Cuban Missile Crisis. Kennedy had just signed an executive order that we were not going to go to war in Vietnam. We were going to pull the troops out. Curtis LeMay, smoking his cigar, showed up at the autopsy, and the generals gave orders as to what could or could not be done. Within hours of Kennedy's death, Lyndon Johnson reversed the order on Vietnam. There's going to be billions of dollars made by war. November 22nd, 1963 is the day the deep state, CIA, State Department, military industrial complex, controlling the press, controlling the Department of Justice, decided they would conduct a coup d'etat, and the deep state's been in charge of the U.S. government ever since. We've been living in a Jim Carrey Truman Show. We think we've been watching reality. We're watching a play staged by the deep state.
I'm afraid so, Dr. Corsi. I've heard before, I can't remember if it was John Connolly or his wife, Nellie, but I heard some account of Kennedy saying, oh my God, I'm hit. Have you heard that before? And do you know where that lands in between the rounds here? Because if one went through his throat, I'm guessing nobody would have heard him say that.
There's not evidence he said anything, really. I mean, there's some discussion about that, but it's never been proved one way or the other. I don't think Kennedy said a thing. I think he got hit. He looked at Jackie. He knew he'd been hit by a round in the throat. Actually, no bullet was ever found in the throat. Dr. Manning believes it was a shred of glass from the window that pierced through the neck and bruised his lung. That was seen at the autopsy. The bullet that hit the back, Dr. Mantic believes, was shrapnel. There was no connection ever of the bullet from the back to the front. They never found a connection. Oh, that was pivotal to the single bullet theory, which, you know, moved a shot up to the top of Kennedy's head, not the low angle shot you see in the cover, what the x-rays show. And the government's trying to make two bullets do all this damage, and the single bullet theory ending up in the pristine committee exhibit CE-399. It's impossible. Connolly died with more lead remaining in his body than is missing from CE-399. They never removed all the lead from Connolly's body. And he suffered.
None of it adds up. Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there, Dr. Corsi. The book is The Assassination of John F. Kennedy, The Final Analysis. I highly recommend you purchase both this and the preceding book, The Who Really Killed JFK, both by Dr. Jerome Corsi. Dr. Corsi, thanks so much. Can't wait to have you back on State of the Nation right here on today's News Talk, TNT.